This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
And everybody, it's the Tom Sinnott Show. A great Saturday afternoon, and we have got a big, very important show for you today. It is going to be unbelievable. I'm sitting here reading my four-year career book, talking about how important this profession is and how real a business it is, reading stories of lots of people, people like Garrett McGrath from the ANMP and Tina Beer. And it's just a great book by Richard Brook. His wife, Kimmy, just came out with a new one. You want to see that? It's just great looking at all this stuff. Obviously, next month, we've got GoPro in Las Vegas. That's with Eric Worre and Richard Branson and Tony Robbins and a tremendous lineup of speakers. So I'm telling you, this profession that we're in is doing great work on this planet, and it's providing a hope for people. But we can't provide false hope. We can't make false representation. We can't do any of that. And the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, is really adamant that this profession really raises its bar of integrity. So we're going to have Kevin Thompson on here in a few minutes. He's at a soccer game with his daughter. So another powerful voice who subbed for me forever on this show while I've been on one of my myriad of vacations has been a guy named Tony Cannulli. And Tony is a student of network marketing. He's heavily involved with the MLMIA, and he's just an overall intense guy. Hello, Tony. How are you, buddy?
I am great, my friend. Here. Good to hear your voice now that you're back in town.
Yeah, I'm back. I'm going to Australia tomorrow, so it's a short-lived stay, but I am very, very excited to do this show. I had a replay scheduled because I am so busy getting ready to go. But when I saw what Kevin Thompson had written, I figured it was time to chase him down and chase down some of the significant voices of the profession, Troy Dooley, Ted Knight, and yourself, and just get somebody to give me their two cents on what the FTC is really saying and what we need to do to be ready to stay in business. So take it away. Tell me a story.
Tom, you had mentioned accurately so about the great profession. You're absolutely right. We've got some of the most incredible things. I mean, Tony Robbins, Richard Branson, validating the space that we're in. You've always said that network marketing should be the last house on the block, and really it is the only house on the block, as we know, Tom. So there's a lot of great things going out there, but false expectations, managing expectations. You know, the FTC is a little heavy-handed, but as you've said, as myself and many other advocates have been saying for many years now, Richard Burke and Troy, we need to start watching what we say, watching our language, watching our behaviors, watching the promises that we make to people that join this profession. And if we don't do it, the FTC, the government's going to do it. And what we're seeing is what you and I and many other people have been seeing and talking about now for many years, as you know. So that's what's going on. So they're a little bit heavy-handed. I had a great conversation last week with BK Borrego. For those that don't know BK, he's the founder of Vima, one of the companies that was really shut down and closed down last year and came back and miraculously has come back and has been limping along. And then, of course, since then, we've had the issue with Herbalife. I had also a conversation with Kevin as well, Kevin Thompson. And we got a show coming up, Tom, probably in 2 weeks or so, the final verdict. Everything that happened with Vima is pretty much done, but BK is not quite ready to get out and actually go through all the details. So we do have that coming up here probably within the next week or two. I'm a contributing editor for the Network Marketing Magazine, and starting in December, I will be doing a compliance piece in that magazine every month, so that the things are changing, Tom, as you know, radically, literally every day something's changing right now in the storm that we're dealing with the FTC.
Now, with all this regulation, I mean, obviously government regulation is something people are completely allergic to. I'm not that allergic to it. But at the end of the day, we should have been self-policing ourselves all these years with a couple of strong associations, one being the MLMIA, maybe the DSA, which is not distributor-friendly, in my opinion, and the ANMP, the Association of Network Marketing Professionals. And we basically forced the government to step in and police this because we didn't police from within enough ourselves, according to a lot of people. And that's kind of my opinion. I mean, I'm around this a lot. I talk to a lot of newer distributors, and I tell them it's going to be hard work. I tell them it's going to be a long haul. I tell them that they're probably not going to make money at this. And they say, well, then I'm not going to enroll with you. I'm going to go get to the guy that told me that I can make X amount of dollars in X amount of time. And he showed me his wristwatch in his car, in his house, to prove that. And that's kind of what we've been up against. Is that something that we can still self-police and make better, Tony? Or are we just going to have to wait for him to put these in? And obviously, Kevin's going to talk about the customer rule. But I think these income claims and these lifestyle claims of standing next to somebody's car and saying it's yours has been as big a problem as anything, don't you?
Absolutely, Tom. So I'm just going to say it the way it is. It's garbage. I could use a stronger term, but we are on radio, and I don't want your advertisers to get mad at you. The reality is it's garbage, bogus. You have been a proponent speaking of it for as long as I can remember. And absolutely, in answer to your question, can we do something about it? The good news, if this, you know, some people see this as a storm. Sometimes it's hard to see the rainbow. Sometimes it's hard to see on the other side of the storm, Tom. As you know, what's going on, the turbulence right now, there's some good things that will come out of this. I truly believe and expect that. We need to be doing what we can be doing now that we've brought this awareness out, is we can start, people like yourself, myself, Troy, Lynn Clemens, and Richard Burke, and many of the advocates that we work with, Ted Knight and the Forest and Kevin, we can start taking and saying, hey, listen, man, they're not playing around. You know, when I was on with DK Barreco, we had about a good hour conversation, and he said, Tony, he said, they literally took me to my knees, and they took a $5 billion. For those of you who don't know what Big Herbalife is, they've been around since 1980. They're a $5 billion, one of the biggest network marketing companies in the world, and they took them to their knees. And the deal they made with Herbalife is even worse than they made with BK Barreco. So they're not playing. And we can make a difference, and we need to make a difference, and we will make a difference. And I believe the industry is going to get better and stronger and more credibility and more validity. I have a very, very strong, positive outlook, Tom, just like you do.
And the cool thing about what you just said is that they took on Herbalife, which had they taken on a myriad of the smaller companies, they would have never had the capital to defend themselves. And, you know, it's a miracle BK was able to do that. And I'm telling you, thank God it was somebody strong like Herbalife. And Herbalife was able to stand up to Bill Ackman and the FTC. And really, kind of like Amway did so many years ago, spot the battle for all of us so we could stay in business. And a lesser company might not have been able to weather that storm. And Kevin will talk about that when he comes on. But it was a blessing they chose Herbalife. It was a blessing that Herbalife didn't have those skeletons in the closet, because Ackman would have found them, and it would have gotten much worse. And I am happy, and I'm not happy for Ackman losing all his money, even though I don't like the guy. I think it's horrible that people can short stocks indiscriminately in any profession or any space or any industry. And lots of stock smart people think that that is really the balancing of the stock markets. But to be able to hammer companies with stock that you don't have is, for me, shorting stocks is what those hedge funds do. A really, really sad, sad reality of the stock market. And Ackman really got his hat handed to him just because of the zillions of people in Herbalife who took it personally, his attack that it was a zero bid company. So they picked on the wrong guy, thank God, or the wrong company, thank God, and we're going to live through another day. But that takes us to, with all this attention being put on compliance, is that chasing the little guy out of network marketing? I'm reading a text from my good friends down in Australia. Ken and Elaine Smith. Is that taking the little guy's confidence so far out of this profession, or is it really giving that little guy more confidence that the good companies are survivors and this is a space that they can actually make some extra money in? Which is it, Tony, do you think?
Any change, as you know, Tom, and you're a master at this, is any change for anybody is always scary, right? I mean, there's only one constant in life, Tom, as you know, is that's called change. But most people have a difficult time accepting and dealing with change. So for some people out there right now, there's some fear due to all of this. I understand that. But at the same time, really what the FTC is trying to do, and they're not necessarily doing the best job of it. I think their understanding is very limited as to really what we do here. But what they're really trying to do is to protect us from some of those things out there, Tom, like, remember, Zeke Rewards, you know, the biggest Ponzi scheme we've had in our profession, and some of the many other myriad of companies that don't really have a reason to exist, and many of them are just outright, we'll take your money. And so it's doing the best it can to help police for us. Like you had said, it's not doing what we have been attempting to do. And I say we, for years and years and years, we have stood up there and said, listen, guys, we got to stop doing this. And we saw things going on, Tom, as you know, that wasn't good. It was leading people down the wrong road. We pointed out. And so now we're forced to. We're forced to work with them. So it gives us some guidelines, and it gives, I think, overall a blanket of protection for the little guy. And like I said, there's never been a better time. Listen to me carefully, everybody that hears the show. There has never been a better time in our history to have a home-based business, period.
Tony, in the article that in the editorial, maybe that's a better word versus article, that Kevin Thompson wrote, he said the newer companies might have a better shot because their reps don't have the bad habits over the last 20 years. I'm not a big lover of startup network marketing companies, but trained wrong and retrained right is a lot harder than starting over and training right. That statement had a little bit of validity to me. I didn't want to admit it because I'm in a company myself that's 20 years old. What do you think about that? I mean, so many of these newer companies go out of business. I thought that was a bold and very odd statement.
It's true, Tom. Both are right. You're absolutely right. You and I both see the companies. I mean, I tell people right up front that unless you like taking risks, then it's very difficult to pick a company that's less than 5 years old and know that it will be around. If not,
hey, Tony, I'm going to interrupt. Tony, I've got to interrupt you. We're going to take a break. Matt Jamison, I love you. Thank you for listening. Let's get to a break, and we'll be back. Hopefully, we'll have Kevin by then. We'll be right back. We are back. It's a short segment here, so don't get all irritated because you're going to be looking at about 5 minutes of radio and then 3 minutes more commercials, and that's just what happens when you're not an internet radio show. Two things happen. One, you don't hear any profanity because we would all end up in handcuffs. And the second one is you do hear commercials. And Richard Brook, my old buddy, just hates the commercials, and it's so funny listening to him whine about it, whatever he's on, but that's just the way it goes. But speaking of somebody who's a rock star, it is Kevin Thompson. He has emerged as really the voice of the legal side of network marketing. He's partnered with a bunch of good attorneys. He's partnered with a bunch of great company owners who care about the future of the profession. And the people, the spokesmen, the Troy Dooleys of the world, the Tony Canulis of the world. And he's also on the side of a bunch of really big reps who are committed to the little guy getting a fair shot. And all this stuff with the FTC, all this stuff going on, people think it is a terrible thing. I'm not sure that that's what the truth is. I think it's a good thing because it's cleaning up a profession that should have cleaned itself up. It's time, and it's going to be some rough going, but I'm telling you, if we survive it, we are going to come out of it smelling like a rose. Kevin Thompson, how are you, buddy? You've got Tony Canulis with you, too.
Appreciate being on your show. Thanks for the invitation. Thanks for being flexible with my...
We came into this thing looking for some answers, and we are committed that you've got the microphone. So while this might sound like a dissertation versus an interview radio show, people are sending us some questions, so I might interrupt you. But what the heck do you both think? Where are we? Are we in great shape, or are we in murky water? Are we in deep water, or can we get through this and be a better industry profession on the other side?
So with this kind of talk, I like to start with the conclusion. Because there's a lot of impatient people there, and they're like, we'll get to the point. The point is, the future is bright. Several years ago when I first started, I had a very negative outlook about the future of the space because there was a lot of garbage. I wrote an e-book called Saving the Industry by Defining the Gray. When there's gray, and the gray is this wiggle room in the law, it's legal, is it not? It really depends. What happens in that kind of environment is a company like Zeke Rewards can... It's an illegal Ponzi scheme that can pretend to operate as a legitimate network marketing company. They can say the right things. They can hire, do all these things. And that really soils the reputation of the industry because when it goes down, people say, well, it's just another pyramid scheme, another network marketing company that hurt people. And what's happened over the past 6 months, there's been more activity over the past 6 months than there has been over probably 20 years, right? So the industry was rocked in 1994 in the Omnitrition case. There was some law that came out of that case. It was really confusing. Omnitrition created this question of, is it okay to pay commissions on internal consumption? Meaning, if a rep buys a product, is it okay for there to be commissions? You know, is that a sale, a legitimate sale? And to rewind a little bit, remember, pyramiding is when you pay rewards unrelated to product sales to ultimate users. Again, unrelated to product sales to ultimate users. Well, Omnitrition raised this question, are distributors ultimate users, right? Does that count? And most of the industry said yes. Some people said no, and you have a debate. And there have been numerous cases since then, and for the most part, especially after Burn Lounge, which was a decision that hit in June of 2014, internal consumption is fine. Right? Commissions generated by distributors buying product is fine. Rewind to 2002. Even the FTC said internal consumption is fine. But there's this big mystery until Edith Ramirez's speech. There's been this big mystery about how much is too much. Right? So if 99% of a company's revenue comes from the sales force, that's a problem. If the average distributor spends $500 a month and the average customer spends $20 a month, that's a problem. And so we've had this gray. At what point does a company become a pyramid scheme? At what point is a product not a real product? An example would be $1,000 pencils. Well, I mean, distributors can buy it. You can recruit distributors to buy it and maybe have an automatic shipment per month.
Kevin, I'm going to interrupt you for two seconds, and then we're going to come back for a long segment. We've got Kevin Thompson. Don't you dare do anything except go look him up on Facebook because he's somebody that you're going to want to know in your future. Kevin Thompson rocks. We'll be back right after this. We are with Kevin Thompson. We've got Tony Cannelli sitting in. He's really at ground zero on this conversation called what the FTC really wants us to do and what it's all about with what he's talking about customers and about income claims and lifestyle claims. So we're going to get into all that hard right now. So, Kevin, just continue on that track you're on. It's fascinating, and I'll interrupt you if something comes up.
Sure, of course. Yeah, please do. Where I left off is there's been this confusion up until Edith Ramirez gave her speech about how much internal consumption is appropriate or how much is too much. So if you're selling $1,000 pencils, it's a product in theory, but clearly there's no outside market for that product. So suppose that company can show that the, 5% of its revenue comes from customers in theory. Is that enough? 10%, 20%, 30%. We never had a hard answer. Even in the Burn Lounge case, which came out in 2014, the courts said, because Burn Lounge is so obviously a pyramid scheme, we don't need to decide the degree of appropriate retail sales, right? Burn Lounge had 3%. 3% of its revenue came via retail. Court didn't give a magic percentage. And so there's this gray. And one thing I've been challenging the industry to do and challenging DSA to do, the Direct Selling Association, and I've written several articles on the subject over the past several years, personal plug, thompsonburton.com/MLM attorney. A lot of articles over there. I've been pushing the DSA to really embrace this concept of retail sales. And they haven't done it. And I'm not suggesting that they're ineffective or they're bad leaders or they do a bad job. The reality is the Direct Selling Association, which is the most important trade association in the industry, they have the most authority in the industry. It's an association that consists of over 100 different companies. And there's different models, different agendas, different leaders. And for the most part, as a whole, the DSA hasn't evolved. It hasn't pushed for an improvement in standards. What they pushed for is they've said, yeah, internal consumption is fine. Doesn't matter. The extent, the amount doesn't matter. As long as you have a 12-month refund policy. Right? That's what the DSA has been a champion of. 12-month refund policy. Who cares who's buying the product? The problem is, with that kind of approach, you can have companies that sell, again, $1,000 bottles of juice or $500 bottles of juice. As long as there's a refund policy, they're a legitimate network marketing company. And we all know in that kind of environment, people get hurt. So fast forward to Edith Ramirez's talk, the purpose of this show and the reason why I'm here. Herbalife settled with the FTC. And that's pretty severe. And the narrative has been, well, it's kind of punitive towards Herbalife. It's unique towards Herbalife, right? Because Herbalife, just to summarize the requirement, essentially two-thirds of the volume has to go to retail customers. In other words, a distributor, it's actually on the distributor level. If your downline consists of less than two-thirds retail, you don't get paid. That's pretty severe. And then also, there can't be a required monthly quota amount. So no monthly volume requirements. Of course, the income claims have to be under control. And another limitation is rank advancement can only be achieved through retail sales numbers. Okay, so group volume doesn't really matter if it's distributor volume. It has to be retail. Those are the big ones. And so the question has been, well, what can we as an industry take from that? Because those kinds of restrictions are different from the law. And the popular narrative has been, up until Edith Ramirez gave her speech, the popular narrative has been, well, it's kind of unique towards Herbalife. It's not really an industry-wide thing. The FTC, they can't make the law. They can't recraft the law. Same thing with Vima, by the way. The narrative has been, well, they just don't like DK Pareko. It's a personal action. Not really. They had a problem with him. They had a problem with some activities here and there, and they just found a way to shut it down. I'm just telling you the truth. That's been the narrative. I think the FTC recognized that question. And just to recap, Edith Ramirez, she's the chairwoman of the Federal Trade Commission. The Federal Trade Commission is largely led by five commissioners. And she showed up, and a lot of people – I was there. A lot of folks were not expecting a lot of substance because, again, the FTC, they're not elected officials. They cannot make the law. But what she did was fascinating. She put the issue to rest. She didn't certainly state the law, but she made her attitude very clear. And the attitude is, if you don't look like Herbalife, if you don't look like, or if your company doesn't have or achieve the spirit that the Herbalife order tries to achieve, if your company doesn't focus on customers, then there are no guarantees. It's what she said. So she gave a lot of substance, and she confirmed the Herbalife order matters. And if you want to know what a good network marketing company looks like, familiarize yourself with the order. Now, she did say this. She said, it's not, you know, the terms of the order are unique to Herbalife. You don't have to follow it letter for letter, but the more you deviate from it, the more risk you have. And so that was sort of the conversation that everybody in attendance had after she left. It was, well, what do you take and what do you disregard? I will say this, Tom, and then I'll let you jump in and ask the questions. This is really good for the industry because when the Herbalife order hit, I thought, man, it's really strict. And I'm actually really surprised they voluntarily went for that kind of deal. And hat tip to Troy Dooley. Troy actually this entire time has said the Herbalife case is going to be a sort of a new Amway standard. He said that. I disagreed because I didn't think the Herbalife case would make it this far. I didn't think they'd agree to this kind of a settlement. But they did. And that settlement is a template for us going forward. So it's good for the industry because when I first saw the Herbalife order, I was a little pessimistic. But the more conversations I have with distributors, they're not having a hard time generating retail sales. It turns out leading with product is good for business. Now, in some cases, leading with opportunity and being heavy opportunity, getting people to a weekly meeting for a recruitment pitch, those days have been over, in my opinion, and they're not very effective. And as you know, as a man of the field, as a very good leader in the field, doing things right for a very long time, I've been watching you, not everybody says yes. But a lot of folks buy product. So if somebody doesn't join the business, they're a potential customer. So going forward, the analogy is it's like cheating in baseball. Before Edith Ramirez's speech, you had to kind of cheat. Right? And I say kind of loosely. You didn't really have to cheat, but companies had a really tough decision. The more compliant they were at a competitive disadvantage. So they kind of argued the gray. Well, you know, the DSA says internal consumption doesn't really matter. You know, 80% of our revenue is internal consumption, so who cares? We have a refund policy. Check, 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 we're good. That doesn't work anymore. So now we know without question what's good and what's bad. And that's the good thing because I think as an industry, the entire industry can now pivot. Whereas before, you know, every company was making its own decisions. Every company had a different risk analysis. A guy like Richard Burke, for example, you mentioned him earlier, likes to do things right, right? And so he does things right. And it's hard for him to compete with people that push it. They've got $200 monthly auto ship requirement. Hard to compete in that kind of environment. Now everybody is sort of in the same boat. And I think that's a good thing.
Let me ask you this. Somebody said, is it possible to look at a human being and just say, listen, I want to find out what you're looking for. Is it money? Is it time? Is it health? And let that person and drop that person right where they want to be versus the normal multi-level marketing agenda of just throwing up on people and telling them they're going to be a millionaire or a product's going to make them fly. To just be professional in the conversation like you were a realtor or in a stockbroker or anything else and say, listen, what do you need? And they say, well, I've got arthritis. And then you sell them a product that might serve them. And if they say they do want to build a business and make a little extra money, is the FTC allergic to having a conversation with those people about the possibility they could make a little extra money in a network marketing scenario?
Without question, the FTC is not allergic to references of supplemental income. In fact, Edith Ramirez addressed that at the talk. Supplemental income, no problem. It's promises of riches, and in particular, images of lavish lifestyles that really upset the FTC because, according to them, when you portray those images, the reasonable consumer expects the same result. Now, I disagree with that. I think people sort of know, you know, you look at these pictures for prescription drugs and everybody's just happy and, you know, cheerful. As a consumer, I know that's a commercial, and it's advertising, and if I take the medication, I'm not going to be happy and, you know, sitting around in a bathtub holding my neighbor's hand all day. It's referring to the Cialis commercials.
Sure.
So the FTC has sort of this outlook, and consumers expect to achieve the results that they see. Right or wrong, that's their expectation. So the references of lavish income, they don't like it, because in this industry, it's one of the best things about it, and it's one of the worst things about it. It's the low cost of entry. Anybody can join for $50 or $100. Anybody can join. Once they've joined, they're in the database. And if they quit, or if even if they keep buying just because they like product, the FTC sees them as a loser, as a net loser, as someone who's lost product. They're a victim.
I got that. We gotta take a quick break. We're coming right back up for the final segment. You stick around. All right, we're back. It's Tom Chenault. It's the Tom Chenault Show. Hopefully you're having a great day. Tony Cannulli was with me at the very beginning. Can't thank him enough for pinch hitting until otherwise it would have been a very, very boring show for the first 15 minutes. And then we got Kevin Thompson, who we were dying to hear from, and it is exciting that we've got him. Kevin, if you don't follow him on Facebook, if you are not tracking him, he is a real voice of sanity out there. He is not afraid to be straight with people and telling them that they're about to step on a landmine, which is really what we need. I'm interested in this show and flash that you just talked about. What is that all about? I mean, if you are living a lifestyle, whether you have a big house or whether you have a big car, and you don't tie that to any kind of, if you're just putting pictures of your life up on social media, is that something they even hate, even though you didn't say you could have this? Or what is that all about?
No.
When people are wondering where the line is.
Sure. And I think, you know, live the life that you live and it's okay. It's when the lifestyle is in conjunction with recruiting efforts. Meaning, yeah. Join me and you can have this. And I think it's the pressure isn't really on the individual rep. The pressure is on the company to provide training. And I think companies have been really lax. In particular, your younger companies, they don't invest a lot of training. They just sort of put the pipeline out there and they see what shakes out. And they let people do what they want to do. That needs to stop. Companies need to set the agenda. Right? They need to have, in my opinion, they should have video training where they teach people the importance of customer sales. They don't have to develop strategy for moving product, but at least talking about the importance of emphasizing product, the importance of, you know, the structure of the plan and why it works in the field's favor to focus on retail, and then also talk about compliance. You know, there's some third-party trainers out there that have great events. You know, I have friends with Eric Worre. Worre does a great job. A lot of companies are outsourcing the training, so to speak. That's not a great idea, right? Those events are still good, but companies need to really take ownership of that process, because one conference a year isn't enough. The company has to make sure the incentives are structured properly, make sure the product has value, make sure reps have the tools to teach customers about product value. It all starts with the company. And right now, after Ed Ramirez's speech, there's more pressure on companies than ever to provide value. And I think you'll see a lot of companies respond. I've had a lot of conversations with clients. They're encouraged by this.
Yeah.
Some are discouraged because they don't have real product value. The product value is lacking. But some people, like, finally, you know, the rules are crystal clear. And they're ready to accept that challenge. And I think you're going to see, for example, Herbalife. They're going to surprise some people. I'm hearing that they're actually growing with these kinds of restrictions. One of Herbalife's top distributors actually, and I hate to mention a particular company, but they've had to swallow this pill before anybody else. And so they're a good sort of guinea pig, a canary in the coal mine. One of their top reps actually doesn't sponsor somebody until they've lost 5 pounds of their customer. So the customer strategy is sort of a lead generation strategy, and the customer numbers are there.
Yeah.
I'd never be able to sign up for Herbalife. I've never lost 5 pounds in my life.
Yeah, but it's working. Other kinds of problems.
So we got one more question somebody wants to ask you. We've only got 2 minutes left. All the MLMIA, Troy Dooley, Tony Cannulli, the DSA, obviously the Association of Network Marketing Professionals, Ted Knighton, all these people trying to step up and make noise. We've got to still continue to beat the drum as groups and associations to make sure we are complying. Is that just... Are we spitting into the wind, or do you think that kind of leadership is really necessary from the advocate side of this?
I'm going to give you an honest answer because it's an honest question. I think it's a bit of both. It's important for people to get together in these associations. But at the same time, if there's no clear agenda, it's spitting into the wind. It just doesn't matter.
Right.
And what I've seen is that these companies are really good at having events, but there's no clear agenda because, quite candidly, the law wasn't clear. And so where do you draw the line? And if you draw the line somewhere, for example, if an association said, you know what, we think it's unethical to have a required auto ship, well, you just alienated half of your base. So there's never been an agenda. Now the standard is clear. Now I think a clear agenda can be set, and these associations can provide a lot of value. But before now, no, I didn't get too involved because I didn't see a whole lot of action.
No, that's a great answer, and I happen to believe you 100%. So, Kevin, we got 1 minute. What should people do? Should they join associations? Should they really, really tell their company that they want to be compliant to stay in business? Or what would you just give everybody listening to this show a little tiny bit of advice for what they can do to be part of the solution?
I think it's a great question. I would be optimistic. I think maintaining optimism is really important. And understand that this is a good measure. This is good evolution. This is an example of good regulation. And so there's optimism that the industry will have a future. So the thing that people can do, they can ask their companies to do better. If...
Okay, we gotta go. We are out of here. That is it. We're gone. See you next week, everybody.